very much. My name is Lungi Mganga Sabashe, the chairperson of the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee. I am going to continue with the session now until we finish around the 1 or 2, the latest. And thank you for your understanding. Before we went to a break, I want to come back to that situation and explain to our guest here and the members of the public that the members or the member of HOPS that entered our meeting meant no harm, no disrespecting the committee. It's unfortunately that the message that got to us was not conveyed before the committee started the meeting, because the member of HOPS arrived when we already started. They are already working with the SCOPA Committee of Parliament, and they are assisting the committee, and also they will be assisting this committee on certain issues. So we just want to apologize that in the manner that the matter was conveyed to the chairperson of the inquiry, it was during the meeting, and it should have been done beginning of the meet before the meeting started. And we want to apologize on behalf of the HOPS that they were unable to come earlier because they were at the SCOPA meeting. And we apologize to the committee and to our guests that it happened in the manner that it happened. And we have accepted the apology ourselves, and we now want to put the matter behind us. Thank you very much. Now we shall proceed. Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chairperson. Yeah, I just thought that before we call on us to ask questions of the board, there were some outstanding issues of earlier on. One pertains to the letters that were signed, signed or unsigned. I think we need to clear that with our legal people, because my understanding is that if an email is sent, it doesn't have to be signed, and courts have pronounced on that, emails and text messages, so that we are clear on our side, what our view is on that. But the legal people can tell us about it later.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I thought the member said the letters must be dealt with administratively, including the support of the legal desk. So I thought we have concluded on that matter. Is there any other point? No, thanks. Can we now proceed? Honorable Mazoni? Noted, yes. Okay. Honorable Uyenge, Honorable Mazoni, Honorable Singh, Honorable Swart, Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Mare, Honorable Kungubele. Thank you. I hope someone is taking notes. In that order, members, thank you. We are now beginning an interaction with the board members. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Khoza, am I correct to pronounce it like that?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, Mr. Khoza, thank you. As the acting chairperson of the board, you are not new in the environment of Eskom. And in fact, you were part of the Eskom board. Is it correct?
That's correct.
How long have you been at Eskom as a board member?
Since the 11th December 2014.
Do you understand clearly the role of the board as it relates to the operations at Eskom?
Yes, I do.
Before you proceed, Honourable Member, I forgot to indicate that you have 15 minutes each member, including your responses. And members, they tend to use their allocated minutes and forget to count the responses that are included on those allocated minutes. Please do observe that. Thank you very much. May I proceed, Honourable Member?
Can you indicate the role of the board as it relates to the oversight in the management and operations at Eskom?
The board provides the strategic direction onto the company, and the implementation arm becomes the CEO and the CFO. It's got subcommittees, and the subcommittees does deal with the different issues in different subcommittees, and the subcommittees then dealt with all the matters within their scope, whatever, and also report back to the main board on a regular basis.
What have you done as a board pertaining to the corrupt practices in the supply chain unit of Eskom?
Whenever we identified or we hear of any situation of the corrupt activities via many channels. One of the channels is a whistleblower, and the other people do submit the issues via email. And we got within the audit environment the issues that are getting investigated internally. And if they confirm to be correct, the proper disciplinary process takes place and the corrective measure then get done on the issues that picked as a loophole in the process. On the other issues that emanated in the media, within our scope, we get a legal firm to do the investigation and give us a report. Then on the recommendations of the report, that we take a corrective action.
Can you agree to the notion that says the Gupta-related companies at Eskom are a thorn in the flesh?
As it is now, it is correct that most of the investigation are taking place on the companies that are Gupta-related.
Is there any senior manager at Eskom who has been found in collaboration with the Gupta-related companies and all other companies that might have been operating illegally?
Yes, definitely. As it is now, we got out of the investigation the issues that have identified certain senior executives that include the CFO, Mr. Anuj Singh. It includes other people in the commercial chain, which at the moment are being suspended. About three of them, I think about five of the people that are already on suspension on the basis of the findings of the investigation.
Has Eskom lost money for contracts that are not appropriate or that do not exist? If that is the case, how much do you think Eskom has lost? Because Eskom represents the communities, the poor citizens of this country.
The findings so far, or the conclusion in terms of the contracts that we have, There is nothing that specifically defines the amount that has been lost at the company. But it does indicate the quantum amount which that involved in the contract which has been suspicious and that are being investigated.
About Mr. Brian Molife, did you ever take a decision to approve or reconsider any application from him in order to leave?
I'm not with you with the question.
Did you ever consider any application from Mr. Brian Molife that would allow him to leave in whatever manner?
Yes, I think Molife submitted a retirement letter to HR and to the chairperson.
Did Mr. Molife resign or retired early? Is that what you approved as the board?
What we know is that he submitted a retirement letter. Even though maybe whatever he said in the media, it sounded as if it's a resignation. And also in our meeting somewhere in November 2016, I think Dr. Ngubane in that particular meeting addressed as if Molife resigned. Taking into account the records that was recorded and what was recorded on CIPC, it was indicating that he resigned, because they asked the copy of the minute and they were given the extract of the meeting of that particular day.
Are you aware of the 30 million surrounding the departure of Mr. Molife from Eskom?
Yes, I'm aware of it.
Is it justifiable?
No.
What is the stance that you actually took? And also, what is it that you think Mr. Molife wanted to achieve when you employed him as a permanent employee, when you knew it for a fact that he was not supposed to be employed in that manner?
I think there was a concern from Mr. Molife that he raised with the chairperson then, which was indicating that he could not accumulate a pension because of the 5-year contract that was taking place in the previous jobs, and he needed to be considered, because initially he was given a job which he assumed it was a permanent job with no limit in terms of the 5-year span. And from that, there was a discussion at People and Governance to look at the other mechanism to deal with the matter. And the letter which was said that it was sent to the minister to request whether we can look at, say, if he completed the first 5 years and he cannot get the pension anywhere, can we consider buying the additional service so that he retire at the time?
Lastly, Chairperson, at Eskom, there are over 40 construction companies that are doing work at Eskom. And in those construction companies, there is no indication as to whether any of them benefited in a manner that the Tegeta company did access a prepayment of plus minus 600 million. Is that so?
No, that's not correct. The prepayment has been done on the previous eras in several mines or several issues, depending on the issues that were pertaining, so that we were able to pay upfront. It was not only together that only it was not the first time that we prepaid.
So are those companies locally based, or the majority of them are local?
Local based.
There's a request that you speak to the mic. It's too soft for recording. Thank you.
They are locally based.
Oh, let me stop there, Chair, in the interest of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much for saving us time. Let me set up again. Honorable Mazoni, your turn.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Khoza, before you started at Eskom, you were at Telkom, am I correct? And tell me, when you joined Eskom, did you submit a CV before you were employed?
Yes, we did submit a CV.
And who employed you at Eskom? Who employed you?
At Eskom?
Yes.
The minister.
The minister. So Minister Brown or Minister...
Minister Brown.
At Telkom, when you worked there, did you work with Kuban Moody?
Yes, he was a sales rep.
And were you and Mr. Moodley ever business partners? Were you and Mr. Moodley ever business partners?
No, we're not business partners.
Not business partners. Okay. Do you know Mr. Mark Pomensky of Blue Label?
Yes, I do.
And did you ever provide him airtime contracts when you worked at Telkom?
Yeah, he had an airtime contract.
So he had airtime contracts. Tell me, did you know Mr. Salim Issa before you joined Eskom?
No.
No, so you'd never met Mr. Salim Issa?
Before, no.
No. And when you arrived at Eskom, were you surprised to find Viroshni Naidu, Mark Pomensky and Romeo Kamalo on the board? Because, you know, they come from Blue Label and Vodacom and, you know, all connected. Were you surprised to find everyone there?
Not really.
Not really. So that, like, the gang just moves together?
Because they were also my colleagues at the time.
Okay. Mm. Did you know these board members? We know that you knew Mark Pomensky before. Did you know Viroshni Naidu before? Did you know Mr. Romeo Kamalo before?
No, I didn't know Romeo Kamalo.
Not? Okay. Once you joined Eskom, were you ever at a meeting of the board that was chaired by Mr. Salim Issa? Were you addressed by him?
No.
So Mr. Salim Issa has never addressed any meeting of board members? Be it formal or informal?
No.
Not. All right. Let's talk about the Denton's report. Now, Eskom famously refuses to give us a copy of the original Denton's report. So could you tell us today, as the acting chair, what pieces of the Denton report suggestions have you implemented so far?
All the elements of the actions that were expected to be done within the report has been completed by management.
Can you give me three examples of actions that have been implemented?
There were actions that were supposed to be taken within the coal, because at the time, I think the coal contracts were not coming through the PTC because of the arrangement that was done by the contract that was signed 2008, approved by the PTC committee, and that we're able to take it back so that they come back into PTC so that we can see what type of the contracts that are getting done.
Okay, that's one.
And the issues in terms of the built program.
Yeah.
That we had to expedite the build program, which was done. We put the action plan, mm-hmm. and so that we're able to control that.
And three?
And three was to address liquidity and the issues that pertaining to the liquidity. We put a program in terms of the saving cost within the organization and deal with the liquidity as well.
So from the three examples you've given me, clearly the Denton's report had some pretty serious problems that they found within Eskom. And obviously certain people have to take responsibility for that. Could you tell me if any disciplinary action has been taken against anyone in accordance with the Denton's report?
Not specifically to the Denton's report, but I think the issues that were getting picked up when we're dealing with the dentist report in different areas where we find that procedurally things were not done, management were taking disciplinary actions against individuals.
And can you name for me, just let's make it easy for you, name two individuals that action was taken against?
I can't specifically indicate because it was happening within management, and there's nothing that happened at the executive level that could have been brought to our attention.
Now, let's talk about this board that's appointed at Eskom. Very new board comes in, people are dropping like flies, massive controversy, Gupta leaked emails come out. Do you feel that your board was appointed correctly, or do you think that your board was appointed for convenience?
I cannot express my feeling, but I think when the Gupta leaks came up, and cetera, and certain people were felt uncomfortable, and they chose to resign.
And do you not think that perhaps there should have been disciplinary action taken against, or at least investigations against those who were implicated in the Gupta leaked emails?
Yes, we do.
You do? So you agree with us on that? Okay, I'm glad we're finding each other on this. Now, we know for a fact that Eskom lied to Minister Brown. She has said as much, and she's produced evidence that you, as Eskom, the board, lied to her about what was happening with Trillion. And in turn, she then lied to me in an answer to my parliamentary question. Do you think that the truth about Trillion would have ever come out had I not asked those specific questions that forced the circle of lies?
Yes, it was going to come out because it was already raised by the external auditors during their audit when they picked it up. They said the payment was paid not against the contract.
Then how as a board do you justify lying to Minister Brown when she asked you about your connection to Trillion?
At the time, I think the information that was given, it was collated from the financial department, and it was passed through to the spokesperson of the company as such.
So and from the financial... I'm sorry, I am going to rush you on this because my time is limited. So when you say the financial department, does that mean Mr. Anoush Singh lied to the minister who then in turn lied to me?
Yes, he's the one who signed...
He's the one who signed the letter.
Exactly.
Right. Can you tell me about the meetings that you've had since your appointment as acting chair of the board with any of the Gupta brothers, with Salim Issa, with any of the Zoomers?
No meetings.
No meetings whatsoever. So you've never had a telephone conversation with them, you've never met with them, you've never received any instruction?
That's correct.
Now, let's quickly deal. Chair, how much time do I have? Oh, fantastic. Chair, let's talk about Mr. Malefi's pension. Now, We're still trying to establish whether it was a retirement that was then misconstrued as a resignation, because as you've just said in an answer to my colleague's question, that he sent a retirement letter, Dr. Ngubane said it was a resignation letter, Mr. Malefi stood up in front of the country and did what everyone thought was a resignation, Honourable Brown, Minister Brown, thought it was a resignation. Now, someone's lying to someone here. And I think as South Africans, we need to give them a straight answer. And Mr. Khoza, please forgive me, but I don't want to hear I don't remember or I can't be sure, because convenient amnesia doesn't cut it in a parliamentary inquiry. So I want you to tell us from the board of Eskom, who is lying? Who lied? Did Mr. Malefi lie? Did he say that he had resigned when in actual fact he had retired? Or did the Eskom board lie to South Africa in saying that he retired when he actually resigned?
In fact, what he submitted as a document, it was a retirement letter. That's what we received as a board.
So you as a board are 100, and you can furnish us with a retirement letter?
Yes, definitely.
Then why was the minister furnished with the information that Mr. Malefi had resigned?
I think the minister made a statement after they spoken with Mr. Molefe at her house.
So Mr. Molefe went to the minister's house, they had a discussion, and the minister failed to realize that he'd retired, but she assumed that he'd resigned.
I think at the debate, They might have a different opinion because I was not there, but the perception that the minister had at the time is that he resigned, and hence he issued the statement.
Right. Now, let's talk a bit about Mr. Dladla and how he instructed the chief executive to take action against the members who had been implicated in all sorts of stories, and that led to suspensions. And yesterday you said that it was in response to a letter that I sent you about destruction of documents that was taking place at Eskom that this full-scale investigation happened. Can you just elaborate very briefly on Mr. Dudler's involvement in the suspension of the Eskom executives?
No, the Eskom executive were suspended with a report that came from G9, which highlighted which emanated from a whistleblower, which identified the three executives, which is Edwin Mabalane, Prish Govender, and Charles Kalima. And those executives were suspended on the basis of that particular investigation.
And tell me, the investigation into the destruction of documents, what did that investigation show you?
The investigation indicated they said there was some administrative issues that happened in the company secretary's office, and also indicated to say in terms of the HR office, there were certain issues that need to be answered.
Okay, so it found that there was cause for being concerned about destruction of documents.
Even though it did indicate to say there's no destruction of document, it might not be proper recording of the information as well.
Now, as the acting chairperson of the board, you do realize that gross incompetence in our country is not a defense. And certainly a company of the size of Eskom that can hold our country's economy to ransom. Would you agree with me that there is clear indication that there is gross incompetence at Eskom when it comes to the financial management, and certainly the HR management, given the Malefi scandal, given the Trillion scandal, and certainly given the scandal that's developing with Tegeta?
Overall, I can say Eskom does have a good employees and the loyal employees that do their job on a daily basis. However, I cannot deny to say there might be individuals that comes up and do the wrong things. As and when we pick them up, we do take corrective action.
Now, you see, Mr. Khoza, I agree with you. I think Eskom has fantastic employees. I think they're managed really badly. And I think the country would agree with me that the management at Eskom has let us down. Now, I'd like to know from you, what members of the executive management is action busy being taken against?
As it is now, if you can recall, we got the CFO on suspension.
Mm.
We got Mr. Koko on suspension. Mm. Edwin Mabalane was the CPO on suspension. And Prish Govender, who was heading the capital belt, is on suspension. Abraham Masango, who is also group executive, is on suspension.
And are you providing information to law enforcement agencies regarding the conduct of these individuals?
Yes, definitely. Where there's a criminal element, it has been handed over to the police.
Now, Mr. Khoza, as South Africans, we look at Eskom, and we cannot help but notice that there is a very intrinsic web that's been spun. And it's undeniable, the evidence is there, that there are many companies owned by the Gupta family, many companies owned by Duduzane Zuma, and many companies owned by Salim Issa that have been given tenders, have been awarded build projects, have been awarded coal projects. As South Africans, do we have a right to be concerned that perhaps certain favours have been done for certain families by our power utility?
Yes, there can be a reason for concern. Even though whenever they come for tender processes, the proper process is getting done for everyone and awarded accordingly. But it is a concern if that comes from the same family, and if people then link them with other communication that takes place outside, which we're not aware.
Now, Mr. Khoza, 1.5 minutes. Mr. Khoza, let's finish it off like this. You say that there is proper corporate governance in awarding of tenders, etc. We have proof that the PFMA was violated with regards to the Tegeta prepayment. Now, what action are you as a board taking with regards to these infringements of law?
whenever we pick it up, we do take a corrective action against the relevant people.
Chair, that's not an answer. We need to know what action is taking place, you're not going to have time to answer that. McKinsey has offered to pay 1 billion rand back. In this very chamber, the gentleman from McKinsey said that he did not want tainted money, and that money will be paid back. Has McKinsey in any way made contact with Eskom in terms of working out a full account that they owe us back?
No, they haven't made any contact with us.
So you have had zero contact with McKinsey?
No, the CEO did engage them on their letter, and from their response they said as and when they got a court order, they will pay the money back.
When they get the court order, they'll pay the money back?
Yes.
Even though in this house the gentleman said that regardless of the court order, they're paying the money back.
That's why I say sometimes it's easy said than done.
Right. Thank you, Chairperson.
You're welcome, Honorable Mazoni. Honorable Singh, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, Mr. Khoza. Mr. Khoza, I'm trying to understand, and maybe you can help here, how the board functioned. Firstly, as board members with the chairperson there, then the board in relation to the minister, and then in relation to the presidency. Because from your submission, I read that there was a lot of objections, particularly when it came to the suspension of the four executive members. You were unhappy, and if I can quote what you said, it was also felt that while deviations from procurement processes were allowed, when warranted, it would be necessary to understand why the presidency required this deviation for the committee. Mr. Sotsi, when he testified here, he says he got a call from the president that he tried to get hold of the minister and DG to cancel a particular meeting. Can you just tell us what kind of relationship first the chairman and board members had? Was it one where there was collective responsibility, and did you raise your objections and have your objections noted to any action that you wanted to take? And then did the minister interfere in any way? And finally, is it the president or the presidency that intervened in certain matters?
I think the relationship between the board members is always of independent nature, where each and every board member is supposed to raise his own opinion as he feels with his own strength and experience, which then creates a robust debate among the board members, which they allow to question each other on issues that are getting raised if they feel that they might need more clarity. The relationship between the board and the minister is controlled via the MOI, and the board charter, and also the performance compact, which then we signed with the minister. And for clarity of certain issues, the board will always use the chairperson to clarify with the minister if it needs the shareholder guidance. However, the board got no direct relationship with the presidency.
But in your document here, you say that the board members raised a number of objections, and you were uncomfortable that members also felt, and I'm quoting, members also felt that if, as the chairperson said, this was a request from the presidency, it should simply have been a directive to the board from the presidency. What kind of request? How did the chairperson put it to the board? Did he say the president asked him, the presidency asked him? But what did he say?
He indicated that he had a meeting where the president was present, as he indicated in this house that he had a meeting with Dudu. And he took it upon as if it was instruction from presidency, which brings the concern to the members. And hence the members wanted to see to try to clarify the issue and also try to find a way to deal with the shareholder representative, which was Lynn Brown at the time, whether is there anything or any instruction that can come of this particular sort and what are the concerns.
Didn't you, Mr. Khoza, think something was really wrong here if that kind of instruction should come? And did you have your objection noted formally in the minutes of that meeting?
The objection is noted, and the concern of the board members is alluded in the minutes of that particular day.
So if we ask for the minutes of the meeting, we will know exactly which members of the board objected. So despite your objections, the chairperson went ahead on the direction of the president to do something.
That's correct.
Thank you. With regards to the TNA media contract, now the contract was for an amount of 43 odd million, and we note that Mr. Majida was said to have authorized an amount of 3.6 million without consulting the EXCO. How do you reconcile these two amounts? I mean, wasn't the board concerned that here's a contract here for 43 million rand? How could we enter into this kind of contract? Was there value for money in this contract, the TNA Media, as far as you are concerned?
Definitely, when it was brought to our attention, it was motivated to say the TNA contract was still required. It was giving the company exposure, and the individual from ESCOM were standing up on the breakfasts and able to address the people, which was giving them enough exposure at the time. So the stakeholder management were comfortable to say they need a contract to continue. The issue was that it did not get the consent from the ESCO as per the delegation of authority, which then the board condoned.
And Mr. Majila left at the end of 2015, yet no action was taken against him on this 3.6 million. I mean, why was this so?
No, he was gone before the 11th of December 2014 when we arrived.
But still action could have been taken against him in other forms, not internally, but in other forms. Maybe it was a crime that was committed or something like that. Was there any move to do anything, take any action against Mr. Majila, even if it was to lay charges against him? For misusing 3.6 million rand of taxpayers' money?
Since management at the time said they needed a contract, it was seen as an oversight in terms of the delegation of authority, which it did not have, which was a procedural misconduct rather than a crime.
And Mr. Khoza, on the question of the 586 million rand prepayment to take out, you were there on the board at that time.
That's correct.
Now, why was this payment with the proposed owners and not the actual owners, Glencore, at the time?
At the time is because the suppliers that were supplying us to that particular mine, it was Msimbiti and Tegeta, that were willing to extend the contract at that time. And in terms of the details, to say who owned the coal at the time was not discussed in the meeting, because it was only dealing with the suppliers that we have on the database.
Couldn't you all precipitate the crisis that was looming? But you waited until the crisis actually took place, and then you were forced to pay this amount.
As I said in my document, which indicates to say the crisis was there for almost 3 months raised in terms of the levels of coal at those particular areas. Management were dealing with it in their committees. If I indicate that thing, the procurement committees sat on the 8th, which had a serious concern now to say, because in terms of the Msimbiti contract, there was a strike that was taking place, it has reduced their output, and then it becomes critical that we have to buy the coal. That was the motivation in the submission.
Now, Mr. Khoza, ESCOM are not out of the woods in terms of the financial concern. Is there any move to lay off people by the end of this year, artisans or any other people? Is any such move that's been contemplated by ESCOM?
Not at that stage.
No, I mean currently, coming towards the end of this year. Is there any move to lay off staff?
No.
Categorical answer is no. Then with Mr. Lahez, the T-Systems, that's my final question. Now, we were told that his plan to contract only certain IT functions would have saved ESCOM 1 billion rand. And this was independently verified by external auditors. Mr. Khoza, you state that you would have saved approximately 800 million rand by using the services of T-Systems. Was the savings, did you actually save this kind of money? How was it derived, or how was it calculated that you would save 800 million rand?
As I indicated to say, the tender which was issued at the time was cancelled because quite a number of professionals that were working in the IT environment took a package which became a risk to change the system in that transition. Therefore, the decision at the time was taken to carry on with the T-Systems, but on condition that certain functions were going to be taken in-house in order to save, and that's where the 800,000 was calculated.
My final question in the 1 minute, chairperson, is, Mr. Khoza, you've been on the board for some time now. If you had to rate governance at ESCOM from 1 to 10, 10 being the best and 1 being hopeless, where would you rate governance at Eskom in the last 3 years?
In the last 2 years, maybe around 3. Take into account the turnover in terms of the chairpersons and the turnover in the executive level that has taken place.
Governance at 3 out of 10. I rest my case.
You have saved me about 6 minutes, 5.5. Oh, okay, thank you very much, Honorable Singh. Honorable Swart? They are not transferable, though.
Chairperson, I think it's important, firstly, to say from our side, to thank all those very committed staff members at Eskom. We alluded to it yesterday. 46,000 odd members of staff that work very hard every day to keep the lights on, that is their job, but under very difficult circumstances. And we know Eskom is a very critical SOE. Our economic growth depends on it, our fiscal path depends on it. And so from our side, I think it's important to thank those hardworking people. But then just to touch on the last question of 3 out of 10, is 3 not too much out of 10? Because if you take, Mr. Khoza, that the credibility, sadly, and you alluded to the fact that there are many hardworking people, and we accept that. You alluded to the fact yesterday, but there are a few rotten people, I'll use the word rotten apples, that are being dealt with. And that impacts the whole of the standing of Eskom. And if you look, Mr. Mashilakoko lying on carte blanche about the prepayment, Mr. Mashilakoko lying about the knowledge of his stepdaughter's contract, Minister Brown unaware of the 2.1 billion guarantee, you as acting chairman, unaware of the 2.1 billion, Minister Brown lied to about the trillion. The relationships with the Guptas, the Essers, the Zumas that are coming out. The changing of charge sheets. Surely this gives a picture, the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming that the credibility, sadly, of Eskom is that of a trillion invoice. Can we believe what is being said? And so that is where we are faced with at the moment. But just with that in hindsight, one of the statements you make in your representation, paragraph 8.1, I wish to point out that Eskom was not involved in the purchase of Optimum Coal Holding by Tegeta and is therefore unable to assist the committee in this regard, as this was a commercial transaction between two companies. Eskom was not involved in the purchase of Optimum. Now, that is blatantly not true. We know for a fact that Eskom was deeply involved in that. Right from the word go, Eskom was dealing with the hardship contract from 2013. Mr. Malefa comes on board. Suddenly the Fourth Amendment to the Endrina contract is cancelled. He might have valid reasons for that. He rejects it. There's a 2.17 billion rand penalties imposed. We know Minister Zwani goes to Zurich to conclude the arrangements. We have suddenly Section 54 mine stoppages at the Glencore mines. The guarantee of 1.6 billion to Tegeta facilitated by Mr. Singh. The public protector's report indicated Mr. Malefe in the vicinity of the Guptas. But the critical involvement of Eskom was Mr. Mashilakoko saying that he refused to allow the sale to go through unless the whole of Optimum Holdings was sold and not only the mine. So Eskom played an intrinsic role in that. Would you agree? And that statement that you made is not correct.
No, I think the statement is correct if you take into account in terms of the involvement of Eskom as a company. I think the issue that was raised by Mashilakoko, it was based on the security of coal and the arrangement that was already done with the previous owner that it goes to the package. That's an operational requirement that is required if he has to deal with the coal. But when we go back to the governance issue that you were talking about, I think the governance issue in terms of the processes and policies that exist within the organization, whether procurement or within the level of the delegations that take place within the organization is very good and is operating, and most of the people are operating about. The issues that you have alluded to, where people have lied in public, it's got nothing to do with the proper governance within the operations of the organization. However, it does dent the image, and I agree that it does dent the image of the organization.
You also indicated that there were many, many meetings, and one of the requirements for the Tegeta sale was the cession and the assignment of the coal supply agreement, which means that Eskom obviously did play a role in that. It was a requirement.
That's
correct. You understand, for me, it's just difficult where you make that statement, Eskom played no role. You obviously had to play a role. Not only that, we know Mr. Corker also contacted the minister shortly after he'd been to Zurich. There's the letter where, because, and he justifies it by saying there was an emergency of coal. So he contacts the minister, and the minister's department writes back to him and says, yes, and there must be a 1.6 billion rand prepayment for coal, the guarantee. So you understand the involvement of Eskom, and you say it's from the coal supply side, but for me, it appears that Eskom played an intrinsic role in the whole sale to ensure the guarantee, which you were unaware of, which is another serious governance issue. You indicated when the financial statements that it was news to you that that guarantee had even been granted without your knowledge and the minister. So you understand where I'm coming from to say that Eskom played an intrinsic role in that sale.
Yes, I do understand, as you explained, but on the fundamental issues I said, where once you got a business rescue, that they were engaging with a business rescue, and the only concern from our side was the security of coal. And all that was debated around, and the assistant that were sourced from the DG of the mineral resources, was in base on the securing of the coal.
Can I just ask you, I put it to Mr. Piers Marsden, who is the business rescue practitioner, that had he been offered the same deal that Tegeta got at the end of the day, with the reduction of the penalties, with the coal being supplied, it would have saved the sale of them going into business rescue. So, and the public protector indicates that it appears, let me use that word because Mr. Molef and myself had a difference on that, that the board leant over backwards to accommodate Tegeta in the purchase of Optimum. Again, indicating that Eskom played an intrinsic role in facilitating that sale.
I cannot comment about the business rescue because I was not involved to that particular detail. But when it came to the Finance Investment Committee, it was a pre-purchase of the coal from the Optimum, or any company that might be willing to buy Optimum at the time, because it was not clear whether it's going to be Tegeta or any other company at the time, when it was approved as a prepayment of 1.6 billion, which eventually converted into a guarantee.
Is it normal practice for in the case of Mr. Corker, to contact the minister for his involvement in such a situation? Because his letter was addressed to the minister in December of 2015, shortly after the minister had been to Switzerland. Is that a normal practice?
It's not a normal practice if it was going to go to the minister, and I'm not sure whether it went to the minister, but he can liaise with the DG in the department.
I'm just saying because, sorry, to the DG, let me correct that, to the DG, to the department, and then the DG came back very quickly to indicate that they were fully supportive of that purchase of Tegeta and the guarantee of the exact figure that was needed. And you understand the complicity that one tries to ascertain here. But let's just have a look at your governance. There's a very important meeting that took place in December, and it was the Board Tender Committee, and it was a discussion of primary energy, and it related to the recommendation to enter the cession and assignment of the coal supply agreement between Optimum and Eskom, and that obviously had to go through your governance structures.
That's correct.
And you were at that meeting, you chaired the meeting, Mr. Corker was there and various other people. The recommendation then was to enter into the cession and assignment of the coal supply agreement between Optimum Holdings and Eskom from Glencore Operations to Tegeta, right? And there was a motivation, and that was the motivation that was then brought by Mr. Coco, and it was explained that there was preconditions. The cession was a precondition for the sale. So you again see Eskom playing a key role. Understandably, you need a precondition. Would you agree with that, that that was a precondition for the sale? The cession of the coal contract.
Yes, definitely.
So, in other words, without that, that sale could not have taken place.
Correct.
And therefore, Eskom played an intrinsic role in the sale of Optimum to Tegeta in that light. You must concede that, obviously.
What it indicates there to say, if you have to pay the amount, you can only pay the amount if the sales has gone through. That was a precondition.
So without that precondition from Eskom, the sale would not have gone through. Is that correct?
It can't go through because you can't pay somebody
yes
if
or
that
no.
person
I mean,
doesn't have call.
Yes or no?
That's correct.
And therefore, Optimum played a role in the sale. Correct. You've got to concede the point. I don't know why you hesitate, Mr. Kota. It's here in the documents.
No, as I said, the context to say the precondition was said is pre-sale. It has the sale between Optimum and Tegeta has to go through if you have to pay Tegeta.
Well, let's just read the minutes. It was explained that approval for the cession of the coal supply was a precondition to the transaction between Glencore and Tegeta. It's a precondition of the sale. There it says in your own minutes. Please, it's straightforward. It's not I'm not trying to catch you out. It's a precondition.
It's a precondition, yes.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. But what is also very interesting is that when one looks at this further, and one considers the various aspects that are involved here and the guarantee that was supplied, you obtained financial advice on that guarantee, according to your minutes.
That's correct.
And the financial advice you got was from Regiments Capital. Is that correct? And there it's according to the minutes.
That's correct.
And that we know is Mr. Eric Woods and the SM family involved in Regiments Capital, which became Trillium. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we see that you understand where you can see the dots being linked together now. And in hindsight, it's very clear, and that is what we are doing now. We see the precondition, we see the role that Eskom played in facilitating that sale, and we see that the guarantee was arranged by Capital, Regiments Capital. They gave the approval to the board. They said they've looked at the due diligence and that. And then we see the guarantee being granted, EPSA. Now, just tell me a little bit, you say you've got no knowledge of that guarantee. To me, it's unheard of for a company to grant another company a 1.6 billion rand guarantee to buy a third company. Have you ever experienced that in your limited experience as a board member and now board chairman?
No, but what I've been informed is that at the time, I think the investment committee approved 1.6 billion as a pre-purchase of coal at the time. However, when it came to implementation, an advice was given by the head of treasury at the time within the organization to say it's more risky to lay down the cash against the payment. It's easy to utilize the guarantee. Unfortunately, that guarantee then it went via the CFO, and I had the head of legal confirm to the bank to say Mr. Anuj Singh had a delegation because he had a delegation to do whatever to make sure that the transaction takes place.
And he went to the bank with Mr. Gupta. That is the evidence we have from EPSA. You might not know that.
I don't know that.
But that in itself is a breach of the PFMA because neither yourself nor the minister was aware of that. Would you agree with that?
I agree that we were not aware of the guarantee.
But if you look at the PFMA Act, you will see that it would be a breach of the Act itself.
Definitely, yes.
Have you reported that to the police yet?
It has been identified and is part of the areas that we're investigating.
You see, what you've explained to us yesterday was you investigate, you appoint lawyers to lawyers firms at great firms to investigate, they bring back recommendations, and then you review those recommendations, and it's a bit of a concern to me. You should act on those reports instantly to restore the credibility of ESCOM. Would you not agree with that?
I agree that in future, I think whenever we have investigated, we will take
Sorry, just to ask you, McKinsey, please follow my advice. They came here and they said they're going to pay you 1 billion rand. You need that money.
Yes, we do.
Bring an urgent court application to have that contract reviewed. They will not oppose it. You will get your money. You need it. Do it now. Thank you so much.
Left, I wanted to alert you that you still have 1 billion.
Would you consider that?
Definitely will consider it.
Do it, because they are prepared to pay you the money. You're sitting with financial constraints.
Okay.
And please bring it. Thank you, Chair. I've concluded.
Thank you, Honourable Swart. Honourable Dlamini, it's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Khoza, you are leading an organization with 41,000 employees. Do you consider yourself as a leader of society?
That's correct.
That's correct. Would you agree with me that as a country, we must never accept that fools, thieves, liars and clowns, because they are simply decorated by titles of minister, chairperson, DG and bodyguards, that they are upright leaders of society? Should we accept that as a country?
I don't get your question.
All right, let me make it simple. You came here yesterday and then you said Arnold Singh lied to the minister with the issue of trillion. Is Arnold Singh a liar? You said yesterday he lied. Is he a liar?
I said he misrepresented.
No, you said he lied. No, you said he lied.
That's correct, and I confirm
right.
To say it.
He lied. Let's don't waste my time. He lied.
Yes, correct.
Right. He is a liar. We agree on that.
He
lied. We accept people like Arnold Singh because they are decorated as CFOs of ESCOM with 41,000 employees, that they are upright leaders of society. Do you accept that?
As I indicated to say,
is that what you want us to accept? You said you are a leader of society because you are leading ESCOM with 41,000 employees. Arnold Singh is leading the CFO in ESCOM with 41,000 employees, and you just said he's a liar. Do we accept him as a leader of society, an upright leader of society, yes or no?
And that's why it's a misconduct, and that's why it's...
Do we accept him? I'm not asking if it's a misconduct. I'm saying, do we accept him as a leader of society, as an upright leader of society? It's a simple yes or no. Whether if, in your opinion, you say we accept him, I move forward. Do we accept him or we don't accept him?
We don't accept people lying.
Right. Good. Do you believe in BEE and transformation?
Yes, definitely.
Do you believe that we must never, or do you accept that we must never, in the issues of covering up incompetence and uselessness, and use BE and transformation, that if we are useless and we are incompetent, we must not try to use BE and transformation to cover that? If you are useless, either you are black or white, we must tell you that we are incompetent and we are useless. Do you agree with that thinking?
Definitely.
Good. Now, the AG came here and then it said, this year, irregular expenditure. It moved from 100 million to 4 billion. Let's take from 100 million to the first billion. What were the major items that were spent there?
On irregular expenditure?
Irregular expenditure from 100 million to the first billion. What was spent there? Give me two major items.
I don't know. I can't recall.
All right, let's move from the 2 billion, from 1 billion to 2 billion. What were two major items there?
Normally,
this report was given to you on the 4th of October. And the biggest issue about this inquiry is the finances of ESCOM. It's not about safety boots or something in the mine. It's the finances of ESCOM. Now, I'm saying to you, between 1 billion to 2 billion, what were the two major expenditures there that you spent irregular, as per the AGE report? You don't know?
I can't recall it all right, at the moment.
From 2 billion to 3 billion? You don't know. From 3 billion to 4 billion?
We can provide information.
You know, Mr. Khoza, fancy English, they would say your board is incompetent. But in the EFF, we don't speak fancy English. So your board is useless. That's what it is. Now, next question. You said there was an investigation that happened in the leaks on the media on the payment of Brian Molefe, the 30 million. Who conducted that investigation? You don't know.
There was no investigation.
No, the guy was sitting yesterday, he said there was an investigation. When the leaks came out, because that's the only time you knew as a board that 30 million actually was paid. It was through the media. And you instituted an investigation. Who conducted that investigation?
No, there was no investigation.
So that guy was sitting next to you yesterday, was lying as well.
Allow him to.
I don't think he ever lied.
I don't have time. That's my issue. So there was no investigation.
I don't think he mentioned that investigation.
I'm not here to think. I'm telling you he did. He said yesterday there was an investigation.
No, there was no investigation.
So he was lying. Another leader in ESCOM is a liar. Okay, let's leave that. 30 million rand paid to ESCOM. You are saying the minister declined it because he said it's not in the best interest when you look at the financial conditions of ESCOM. This morning you said it's not justifiable. Between yourself, the minister, ESCOM, and the pension fund, who's got the authority to say how much Brian Molefe must get his pension? Between those four people.
The pension fund got a final say.
They got a final say. So what gives you the authority or the right to say that is not justifiable?
What I'm saying is it was not justifiable. It was not justifiable on the basis to say maybe the process that led to the payment of 30 million was not correct.
Let's go to Tegeta. You're saying there was an agent issue that made you to leave your home and go to ESCOM offices at night with the board and the CFO to pay 585 million to Tegeta because you were trying to avoid load shedding. But in your report here, you are saying Tegeta, they only supply 5%. So you had 95% of other suppliers. But 5% that is supplied by Tegeta, it made all of you as a board to run to ESCOM at night to pay 585 million to Tegeta because we're trying to avoid load shedding. Page 9, 3.3 of your ESCOM strategy, it's saying the board approved an 80-10-10 strategy. 80 operation, 10 planned shutdown, 10 unforeseen shutdown. So that means that 5% is catered there. So what made you just leave at night when you got 95% of supply of coal to rush for this one at night? It's not an ordinary time, at night, 9 p.m., to go and pay 585 million.
No, the meeting happened to be the night because we could only correlate at that particular time.
And you are convinced that it was an urgent issue that was going to shut down the country?
5%. It was an urgent issue that is specific because the supply was specific to a specific power station, which needed the coal at the time.
How much is the rate per ton for the Guptas, Tegeta, and Exxaro?
The rate at
that Guptas, Tegeta supply you and Exxaro.
The contract that is optimum that we're talking about, yeah. It was 150 per ton.
The one that you rushed at night to pay for. Is that the one you're talking about? Is that what the Tegeta company supply you?
That's what they supply us.
How much? You are under oath.
That's 150.
If you're not sure, don't attempt because you're under oath. Are you sure the amount that you're giving me? Don't take chances. If you're not sure, just...
No, I'm saying the contract that the optimum that was sold to Tegeta per ton is 150 per ton.
Have you ever met the Guptas? Have you ever been to their house?
No.
Do you know a man by the name of William Mabasa who drives Ben Gubane? Do you know that man? William
Mabasa. Yes, I do.
You know him?
Yes.
Has he ever driven you?
Yes.
Where were you going?
He drives me wherever.
It's Ben Ngubane's driver. On that specific day when he was driving you, where were you going?
No, he used to drive Dr. Ngubane, now he drives me wherever.
No, I'm saying at the time when Ngubane was still there. Did he ever drive you when Ngubane was still there?
Yes,
Where were you going?
In two different meetings.
Where? Which meeting?
I don't know which specific meeting you're referring to.
You don't remember. You know, you don't come as someone who's arrogant. But I don't know, maybe you're arrogant. You don't come as someone who's self-centered. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe you're self-centered. You don't come as someone who suffers from self-exaggerated importance. I don't know, maybe that's what you are. Now, Koko has been suspended.
But you're not indicating the date of which you're referring to. And I can't just recall anything that happened throughout the year.
All right. So how many trips? It was more than one that you did with that driver of Ben Ngubane at the time when Ben Ngubane was there.
Yes, because
there are drivers. It was one trip or more than one.
They are drivers in the company. They can take you anywhere.
But I'm talking about the specific driver. All right, let's leave that. Koko is suspended. And according to the suspension, if it's correct, he's not allowed to speak to ESCOM employees, the board members, and everyone. When was the last time you spoke to Koko?
Koko, because of the suspension, is allowed to speak to only the CEO.
When was the last time you went to his house?
I never gone to his house.
All right. You said ESCOM has got good employees. I'm sure of the 40,000, yeah, I agree with you. And then you said it's few individuals who are bad for ESCOM. That's what you said yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is Singh good or bad for ESCOM?
At the moment, he's going to go through the process. They're going to test it.
Is Koko good or bad for ESCOM?
The process is going to test it.
Was Ngubane good or bad for ESCOM?
He was the chairperson of ESCOM.
Brian Molefe, was he good or bad for ESCOM?
Yes, he delivered a lot of good things for ESCOM.
Are you good for ESCOM, you, Mr. Kos?
Yes, I am.
The Minister Bongo, he said you asked him to come and speak to Advocate Fanara to offer a bribe. Is that true?
That's what he said. That's not correct.
It's not correct. So Minister Bongo is lying.
I never said so.
No, I'm asking you. I'm saying that's what he said. If you are saying it's incorrect, there are two issues. It's either it's a lie or it's the truth.
I think he was involved in discussion with somebody else. He can answer that question himself.
So you never sent him?
No.
Right. So you don't know the financials of ESCOM.
Come again?
You've got no clue of what happens with the finances of ESCOM.
I do.
But I just asked you now to give me the expenditure. Only 4 billion. It's not a small amount. 4 billion on major items. You said you don't know. You don't have them.
It's quite a number of items that comes up.
And no, but I just asked you only two major items. That you know. Thank you, Chairperson. I've got no questions for this guy.
Thank you for giving me 2.5 minutes. I'm going to call the next member just now. I have to set my watch thoroughly here. Next is Honorable Mare. It's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. I first want to start off with a picture that everybody has the correct picture of ESCOM. First, there was the minister, Kigaba was the minister since 2010 up to 2014 that we had the national elections. So he was the Minister of Public Enterprises. And in his term, there were two ESCOM board members and one CEO for that period. So in May 2014, we had national elections, and then Minister Lynn Brown was appointed as the Minister of Public Enterprises to present. Now, it's interesting, since May 2014, we have now three ESCOM board members up to date and six acting CEOs, to put it that way. Do you think that is normal business to run an entity with 170 billion budget with up and down with new CEOs and board members. There's no consistency here. What is your view on this?
That's why we raise it as a concern in terms of governance, because the change that takes place at the board level and at the executive, it erodes the institutional memory, and it also does not allow the CEOs to get time to execute a strategy. And that's why we raise it as a concern in terms of governance.
We'll come back to the CEOs. In your view, then, who approached then Mr. Brian Mofolefi and Mr. Anoy Singh from Transnet to transfer or second it to Eskom?
I think the board at the time requested the minister to deploy anyone from the parastatals that can come and assist us. And the name of Brian Mofolefi was raised initially.
So why would they move both the CEO and the CFO from Transnet to Eskom? Because that's not a press title that must still do their job on that side. And it's dangerous to move the most two senior people in the executive once off to another one.
At the time when Mr. Mofolefi was seconded, and then also Mr. Singh was also seconded, and because of the improvement that were taking place at the time, then the board recommended to the minister to transfer them both.
So it was a recommendation from the board?
That's correct.
So it wasn't that the minister say yes, she would say that let's do these two gentlemen come both to Eskom. It was the board?
It was the board that made a request.
Okay. I want to move quickly to... Now to Mr. Brian Mofolefi, and something that really disturbed me, I have to say it quite straightforward, is this pension about 30.5 million. And let's go back to 18 months of service. Now, if we change, for example, and we say that each CEO is very much capable of what he or she is doing when appointed. And I've just read out here six CEOs acting since 2014. And if everybody that has been appointed as a CEO should, when be appointed by that different boards, be the competent person to handle the situation at Eskom. If each of these six people come along, and now Mr. C. Maritz is the last one, and apply for early retirement, then the board, how could you differentiate for the one to pay out 30.5 and the others maybe not?
As I indicated, that I don't think we supported the 30 billion, the 30 million, because we did not see it as a board. And if the application followed the right process, it wasn't going to be that amount. And I think Dr. Ngubane and Dr. Mofolefi themselves have indicated to say he did not qualify for the 30 million as well. There was an administrative error.
We come to that now. So your view is quite clear, your view as a chair and the board's view, that you didn't support the 30.5 million payout.
That's correct.
Now let's go back to the four people that were executive level officials that were suspended, and in some cases, according to me, not really valid reasons. And a very senior official was sitting here, Mr. Anton Minner, across here from me yesterday, the day before, and he's also a top senior official of Eskom, and he again and again used the word assumed. I assumed that he's a permanent level. I assumed that he qualified for pension. Now, the whole thing started when you actually sent electronic information through to the pension fund of each staff member within Eskom. And there's a code that you fill in on the electronic version to be submitted to the pension fund. And the code that was filled in stipulated it's a person that is permanently employed by Eskom and thus will qualify for pension. But it was a responsibility for clarity in in the sense of, is this person, as clarity should have been come and get from the Minister of Enterprises, if this person was a fixed contract for 5 years, yes or no, was the person eligible for pension? Now, the code that was filled in indicated that the person does qualify for pension, and he did use the word assumed. A person in that high level of executive level shouldn't assume. Now, if you suspended 4 people with not really fantastic reasons why they should be suspended, why didn't you suspend Mr. Menard on this, what we've heard?
I think at the time, even though I can say there was a confusion, because first letter of offer that was given to Mr. Molefe was of the permanent nature, even though it indicated a term, but the term was not fixed. And I think based on the first letter, which indicated the permanent job or the continuity of the job for a longer period, and I think based on that, he submitted the pension to the pension fund. Then later, and this is, as he indicated yesterday, then the letter that was confirming the 5 years came in later. But when it came in later, he also at the time himself assumed that it's only from that particular initial one, which was a permanent job, it's only just changing, they say now it's going to be a fixed period. And as I said, we got the investigation that we conducted in terms of that, and it was indicated to say he has to go through an inquiry, which he can allude and explain on that particular inquiry.
Okay, I want to go to Mr. Colin Mijala, that was a CEO. He's acting from April 2014 to October 2014. He couldn't sign a contract of $43 million for the New Age deal because that is not his delegation to sign for that specific amount. You agree to that?
That's correct.
Okay. Can I ask you then the question, to your knowledge, did he subvert regular... did Mr. Colin Mijala and others, that's now CEO, senior management level, subvert regular procurement processes? Do they actually try to bypass? Do you have knowledge of that? Because that's where the problems start. The people start, actually, when they have a certain delegations of signings, delegations of power, and they actually start moving behind that level, what they're actually allowed to do. Do you have any knowledge of other senior officials at ESCOM that actually abuse their power or delegations?
No, but I agree that said he had no delegation to sign the $43 million at the time.
Now the question, why did the new board then actually condone this irregular expenditure and go forward with this contract that shouldn't be signed or approved by him?
The motivation that came from the management at the time, they said it was required, it was a requirement to use the contract, and the only thing that was wrong was that it was signed by himself without consulting ESCO at the time. Because it was a requirement on business, then we condone it so that it carries on. So, and also the other thing that was on the contract, it had no exit clause. So it was going to cost us to go to court at the time.
So can I then ask the question? The board condoned it. A motivation was given why you should have this contract. So all board members then agreed that this is now an investment in marketing exercise for ESCOM and that you agree to go forward with this contract.
That's correct. The majority agreed.
Majority, not everybody.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking you.
That's correct.
Did you agree to it as a chair?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Can I ask you, I just want to go back, do you have any interaction as a board chair with the DG of Public Enterprises? Do you engage with him?
Yes, I
do. Mr. Richard Seligov. Do you engage with him?
Yes, we do.
You say we, so it's the board members or you alone?
I do engage him.
Okay. And on, with the, Minister Brown on a regular basis?
Yes, I do engage the Minister as well.
And the Deputy Minister, Mr. Ben Martens?
Yes, I also do engage with him.
On what matters do you engage with Mr. Ben Martens? Because it's actually for me important to know that, looking backwards with these documents that he's sent to this portfolio committee, that he's actually not that much involved with certain functions, to put it that way, and that mostly it's the responsibility of the minister, Lynn Brown. So what interaction do you have then as a board chair with the deputy minister?
He does most of the social responsibility programs.
Only that?
Yes.
Okay. Let's make a note of that. Do you have any engagement with the President of South Africa while you've been the chairperson?
No.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Okay. I want to just move in your view that one of the important functions of a board and the chairman of the board is oversight over governance, good governance oversight.
That's correct.
So the good governance oversight would actually more lie on the level of the executive members' management. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, if I look back and I see that we had seven of six CEOs. Now, appointment of the CEO of a company like Eskom, together with the minister, that's how it actually takes place, the appointment of the CEOs. I'm correct.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, six in the period since 2014. So where does the problem lies when we had six and we had one in the previous term, Minister Gigaba, and now we've got six different people since May 2014. And this term of 5 years in office is still 18 months to go as members of parliament and the minister's term. So I doubt I'll be heading for a six, seven of eight, but six. Where's the problem lies? With the minister, with the board? What's the problem? Because they decide together who to appoint. And every time when you decide to appoint, you should go through a process that this person is capable to do the job as a CEO and will be able to do the job that's expected. And the salary package going with that should be able that this person is sufficient, he can do it, and be paying that package, and he's the best.
That's correct. I think the challenge is on, as I said, if you look at the chain at a board level as well, and the chain of the chairperson, chairmanship, and also the chain at the executive, it was a concern to all of us, because as I said, you don't have enough time to sit and understand and able to strategize and build that particular relationship. And in those six CEOs, most of them it was the acting positions, because so far the previous board or the current board only appointed Malife as a CEO, and other people were acting all along.
Under 50 seconds.
Graciously. My last question. Mr. Montana was a DG in the Department of Public Enterprises. I think it should be known well how this works, you know, the mechanics in the different SOEs. So I'm still questioning this. How is it possible that a person that was a DG and was appointed since October 2014 up only to March 2015, very short period as the CEO, that this gentleman couldn't do the job as a CEO at Eskom?
As I said yesterday, to said, if you recall that they were set aside so that the investigation is not unfiltered investigation that was going to take place, and he went to CCMA and he circled the CCMA. But also, as I indicated, to say there were issues that maybe they have between himself and the chairperson, which was alluded in a meeting that we had.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Baba Okwaza, I think my colleagues have asked a lot of useful questions that are assisting. But let me say this. There's a pattern in ESCOM that is either those who qualify to be fired, who you do not want to fire, the worst you can do is to suspend them. Is that true?
That's not correct, because everyone that is gets suspended.
Again, I say, I'm the one who's posing the question. You may ask me, where do I get that? Those who you don't want but who are doing well, and you don't want them in the workspace, the least you can do is to suspend them.
We can't suspend if a person hasn't done anything wrong. No.
Okay. All right. I thought I had to start there. You see, let me just quickly say, amongst the findings of Bowman, payment of $1 trillion without a contract, do you agree?
That's correct.
The criticism that the methodology used for calculation by McKinsey does not support payments to McKinsey and $1 trillion as they were questioned as to the value of money. Do you agree with that?
Come again?
Oliver Wyman criticized the methodology used for the calculation by McKinsey of value created and does not support payments to McKinsey and Trillia as there were no questions as to the value of money.
No, that's not correct.
So the Bowman report is lying.
I'm not saying it's lying. But what I'm saying, if you talk about Oliver Wyman report, did not say so.
Okay. Prima facie evidence of breaches of fiduciary duties, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and financial misconduct, which contravene PF, does it appear from Bowman? Talk to the
mic. It does.
Yes. Payments of $1 trillion without specific authorization from McKinsey and without contract with ESCOM, is that in Bowman?
Yes, it's there that it does confirm to say we pay without a contract.
Right. It means that we'll have to recover the balance of from trillions. Okay, but let's leave that. Let me go to another issue quickly. Would you agree that Koko, Priskovenda, Mabelane, and Anot, cumulatively, their days of suspension amount to more than 500 days?
That's correct.
And you acknowledge the amount of money they are paid per month?
That's correct.
So in other words, these days are wasted. Do you agree?
I cannot say it is wasted because we got a process to investigate and there's a labor relations process that we have to follow.
An endless process. When did these processes start? When did you start suspecting Mabela?
About 3 months ago. Koko first was on leave for 60 days, then he was suspended when the case was about to start.
Priest Governor?
It's about 3 months.
Let's come to the most important date of March, Mr. Tsotsi coming to the board meeting with regard to suspension of the four executives. And if you read in page 28, in your own report, paragraph 7.2.3, it says the stepping aside, listen to this, it says the stepping aside of the executives were for a period of 3 months, only after it, after which it was understood that they would come back in view of the fact that there were no findings of wrongdoing against them. That's your report. What does it mean?
That's correct. And you recall yesterday to said Dr. Mr. Tsotsi gave us the list of issues that we need to be charged to.
They are not in this report, those issues, am I right?
But on the report it indicates...
No, wait a minute. I don't want to understand. Okay. They are not in this report, am I correct?
They are not in this report.
Do they exist in any public official document of ESCOM?
They exist on our record.
Official public document of ESCOM?
Yes.
But why are they not here?
They're not here because these people were not specifically charged.
But what does paragraph 7.23 then mean?
And that's what was communicated at the time, and that's why this is an extract from the minutes.
Fine. All right. You say, in your report, you say the minister, what was the reason that the minister came to your meeting on the 11th of March?
The minister came to clarify issues because we had a concern with the chairperson at the time.
What was the concern?
The concern, it was said, the chairperson indicated to say he was sent by the presidency or the president is involved yet to suspend the 4 employees at the time.
So that's the reason the minister was called?
That was the reason that we requested to see the shareholders,
yes.
Correct.
Mr. Tsotsi came to the board meeting and said, da-da-da-da, need for suspension and so on, because you were uncomfortable, you said, and Mr. Tsotsi suggested the shareholder must come for that purpose, am I right?
Correct.
And the shareholder came. But the minister says she was not called for that purpose in that meeting. What do we say about that?
She said?
If the minister testified here and said that's not the purpose she went to that meeting for, she went to that meeting to share with you the load shedding, it is recorded and answered, I have no doubt about it. Because we asked her that question several times, and the minister said, no, that's not the reason she went to that meeting. We asked her, were you called? She said, no, I went to that meeting in execution of issues of load shedding and so on.
I will refer on to the meeting that we requested to meet the shareholder. I don't know how then the chairperson communicated to the minister. But the
What is that you don't know?
Because the communication took place between the chairperson and the minister to invite.
But that's the reason you wanted the minister for.
No, we wanted the minister to clarify the issues because we were concerned in suspending the 4 executives at the time.
No, you are not the only one. You don't have to worry. At least on this one, it's not one of those things that we were not hearing you what you're saying. On this one, there's a lot of everyone who has spoken. Except the minister. Say the reason the minister was there was to deal with the issues of suspension, to clarify those issues. And you're not the only one, by the way, who says that. Only the minister. The point I'm raising this chair is that there's a possibility that the minister might have misled this committee with regard to that. If you look at the testimony across everyone else who made that presentation. Now, it was said these 4 executives, it says the areas that were going to be investigated, the people who were in charge of those areas had to be suspended. Am I correct? How would you put a new CEO in that space? 2 reasons. He's a CEO of the entire institution. How do you look at the area? Because not the entire ESCOM was going to be left. And 2, the CEO was new. How do you explain that?
At the time, as I said, the chairperson indicated the concerns that were pertaining to the CEO in terms of dealing with certain executives and dealing with certain business issues.
I'm saying you are the as an individual, you are appointed in good faith with the belief that you've got competence to support or not support rational or irrational decisions. You've got an individual responsibility to do that. And I'm saying, in your own view, being in that meeting, did this thing make sense, including the CEO?
The debate, if you look at the debate that just took place,
I'm asking you. Forget about the debate. You were in that, you saw the issues ahead of you.
Yes, initially we had a concern. And later, after the minister came in and indicated the areas that were not performing, and also taking into account what Zola have indicated about each and every one of them, we were fully convinced to say it can be the suspension can proceed.
Were you convinced now, in particular on the CEO who's new?
The way that the confidence level that was issued to the public was said the load shedding will carry for the next 5 years. The statement that was made was indicating to say the...
Baba, why were you convinced on the suspension of the CEO?
We were convinced because that's a responsibility and a fiduciary responsibility of the head of the organization to make sure that
suspended
operations...
The new CEO.
The operations and finances of the organizations are stable.
You wrote a letter to the minister for the retirement arrangements. Am I correct?
No.
I think of November.
Oh God.
I hate this. Yes. On the 25th of November, 2015, a letter was addressed by ESCOM to the minister in terms of which, that is page 19, in terms of which the specific retirement arrangement for Mulifi were addressed and clarification were requested from the minister. This is in your report.
Yeah, that's correct.
But you said no.
No. You said yeah, I wrote a letter
you
about
said retirement. No, I'm saying you are representing ESCOM, the board. Remember, you said you're speaking on behalf of the board. I told you when I speak to you as an individual.
Oh, okay.
So, but you said no. Now you accept this letter.
No, I accept the letter, yes.
Was there... And you asked on the 9th of February, the PNG, who was the chair of the PNG?
Is what Ms. Vanessa Klein.
2016?
Yes.
Yeah.
Vanessa Klein.
Yes. That PNG met and resolved on these matters. And paragraph 611 says, by this time on the 9th, the minister still had not responded to that request. How do we explain?
That's correct.
What was then on the 9th thing done when the minister had not responded?
The minister has not responded, but I think we did discuss to say how are we going to package it, the proposal. Because we proposed...
The letter was on the November 2015, on the 9th, you resolved, and the minister had not responded. Didn't it send any message to you?
It did send a message, and as we confirmed, to said as the resolution that was taken was subject to the approval of the minister.
You knew what you wanted from the minister since the 25th of November. Am I right?
That's correct.
What you needed was the minister to respond.
That's correct.
But you decided to go ahead before her response.
Yes, at the same meeting, the company secretariat were requested to follow up on a letter that went to the minister. As the resolution could not stand alone without the minister's response.
Under you, Kosiam, On the TNA, it appears, this is my closing remarks. If you look at the TNA, you understood, Ms. Goodson said they had to motivate why TNA project had to be there. And those who came later understood why it had to continue. My chiller who was responsible, you say you couldn't do anything. I put it to you that you didn't charge Machila because he was going to spill the beans of the project that you all of guys are captured under.
The decision was taken in 2014, early 2014, by the...
Not to charge Machila.
No. What I'm saying, the decision on TNA was taken earlier or late in the 2014. We only came in December 2014.
Now, my closing remark is that if you look at all these things, the pattern is very clear. That which is linked to Gupta at all material times, you find a way of protecting either by removing or keeping people, either by sustaining a project or finding a reason why the project must be understood or not investigating. That pattern is going to be found, Babukos. Because if the corruption is related to a Gupta project, you do not investigate it. If you don't investigate, you don't end the investigation. If somebody is good and could not be useful for Gupta purposes, you suspend that person. A bad person who supports Gupta, that person, instead of firing, you suspend that person. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the time you have taken to interact with the witnesses that we have brought in front of the committee since the 17th of October. We started the program, I would say, from the 23rd of May. And we thought we are going to immediately start with the inquiry. But because of unforeseen circumstances, we had to start on the 17th of October. According to the work that we have done so far, I, as a chairperson of, first the interim chairperson of the committee, and then the person who was chairing this inquiry, you have done a very good work. Under the circumstances that we were working on, you showed a very bold, unwavering attitude towards this inquiry. We had a lot of hiccups, and I thought we will only see six or two witnesses because we had a very packed program of parliament. But because of your dedication, we happened to see more than six members. I mean, more than six witnesses. I am not sure what is the number, but it went beyond six, I know. Today is the last day of the inquiry for Eskom for 2017. The committee will adjourn until early 2018, where we will continue with the inquiry. We will have to apply to Parliament and ask if we can use the days of January that before Parliament starts, and before maybe the committee week starts, if it is possible for us, because we still have a lot of committee work that we need to do in January. That has nothing to do with the inquiry, but also we need to look at the other entities that we have not met yet. During the last few weeks, we have heard evidence from various role players involved in Eskom. The evidence presented before the committee to date raises serious allegations of abuse and on state resources. The committee is gaining a more complete picture of the troubled state of affairs at Eskom. This includes evidence of serious governance failures, clear abuse of state resources, and the misconduct of senior officials in these matters. At this stage, the committee will not make a final pronouncement of the evidence before it. However, the committee is of the view that there is sufficient evidence to prompt actions to be taken by the minister and the Eskom board to stop any further abuse of state resources. The committee is committed to further interrogate the information and allowing those implicated in evidence a fair opportunity to be heard before the committee. Let me take this opportunity in thanking you members, the strength you have given me in this committee. You know that there are people who do not want this committee to continue, people who do not want this inquiry to go forward. But because of your strength and because of your dedication in your work, the committee was able to go forward with its inquiry and the work delegated to the committee. I want to make a special thanks to the evidence leader, Advocate Vanara. Advocate Vanara, you have led this inquiry wholeheartedly, diligently. We have put our trust as this committee on you. We know you have other work that you are doing here in Parliament, but we demanded you as if we bought you with trillions of rands. And yet, because you are a true servant of the people, you dedicated your life, your family, and your work to us as this committee. I want to say to you, on behalf of this committee, thank you very much, and keep up doing the good work. There will be distractors on the road. There will be people that would not be satisfied about your duties, but keep up the good work. To all the people that we have interacted with, those who see this process as a process of intimidation or a process of undermining them, I just wanted to say we are serving the country. We are public representatives that are being elected by people on the ground. As much as we would think that we are elected by our organizations, there are people who do not belong to any organization but who want us to be here, who elected us to be here. We are going now through the festive season as individuals. Please be safe on the road, at home. Give time to your families. In this process, you had little time to sleep. Give yourself enough time to relax. Take things very easy so that when we get to work next year, we are more rejuvenated. With the attacks that we have as a committee, I think those attacks has made us more stronger, and we now know exactly how to focus. I have also learned the hard way, but I now know, with the words that were coming from you, honorable members, trying to strengthen me with those words, I think I can still look forward in working with the committee in the inquiry, not just with the everyday committee work, but in the inquiry itself. I want to thank all those people that came to the committee, that respected the committee when they were called, including the board of ESCOM. Thank you very much for coming to the committee. And thank you very much for not asking questions on the work of the committee. We are a committee of parliament. We have an oversight role to do. We are just doing that. We are not here in this inquiry to accuse anybody. We want to know what is happening within ESCOM, within the other entities. We might touch nerves that you wouldn't want us to touch. It is our duty to touch those nerves so that we get into the bottom of the things that are happening in ESCOM, which are outside there and are seen as, ESCOM as a whole is seen as an entity where the rot starts, where the corruption starts, before even it can go to other entities. But ESCOM is the one that is seen as the most corruptible entity in South Africa. Because ESCOM has got a big role to play, has got a big budget. Therefore, people that would want to misuse the resources of government, they would see an opportunity in ESCOM because of the big budgets that are there. Thank you very much for availing yourself. I know you, even if you did not say that, there were people who were saying you are not obliged to come and respond to the inquiry or to come in the inquiry. But because you know the role of the committee of parliament, you agreed to come. And you know the laws of the country, you know the constitution of the country, you agreed to come to the committee. It is unfortunate that our own colleagues did not respect the process. It is so unfortunate because now we will have to subpoena them. And we were trying to be as soft as possible in the process so that we do not go to a point where we'll have to subpoena a person. And it's unfortunate that we'll have to start with a member of parliament to do that, according to the resolutions that are taken today in the committee, even before we can go to the public and the other people that are being mentioned by witnesses in the inquiry. I want to thank the African National Congress for giving me an opportunity and raising me in this manner or developing me in this manner to be a chair, to chair this inquiry for the time they have given me. That has, I have gained experience on the work that they have allowed me to do. I want to thank the people of South Africa for allowing us to get into their lounges, their rooms, and speak to them. They took a lot of time. I remember I met others say they when the inquiry is sitting, they slip out of work and take time to go and listen on what is happening to the inquiry. They don't want to listen to a repeat of what happened in Parliament. They want to hear it from the onset. So they would go, they would leave work and go and watch. I want to thank them also for giving us the attention that they have given us, the media, for publicizing the work of the committee, because the committee took a resolution in saying the work would be open to everybody. It's going to be an open process so that everybody sees what is happening. Thank you very much, media people, and thank you for irritating me sometimes when you call over weekends, on the start of the week, and at the end of the week. Thank you very much for allowing me to express the opinions of the committee. And thank you very much for everybody who was listening to today. We will meet next year. Have a happy festive season. Enjoy your Christmas. Start the new year.
rejuvenated, and please stay alive. Don't drink and drive. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.